Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, greetings once again to all of you along a soaking wet Florida space coast. And especially to all of you who are listening online at WMMBAM.com. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the December 5th, 2009 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, it's good to be back on the air and talking to all of you again. I hope that you enjoyed the UCF football games that were broadcast during this time for the past 4 weeks or so, but now it's our turn to take to the field, and we will not be going away anytime soon. So thanks for sticking with us and tuning in again today. You are invited to join us in the conversation today by calling 768-1240, star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. And if you are out of town and calling long distance, the number is 321-768-1240. And as always, we will take your questions and comments via email. If that's the best way that you want to communicate with us, send email to spacetalking@AOL.com. That's spacetalking@AOL.com. And we keep a screen up here in the studio and check for that email routinely. And, well, jeepers, a lot has happened since we've talked last, a lot to catch up with. During the past month, a lot of things have occurred that I wanted to just run right in and comment on and make a point. And so I have a few notes here to share with you, I guess, some of the highlights. And, of course, the leading news in November, the thing that I think was the most interesting thing of all, of course, was the Shuttle Atlantis flying its penultimate mission, its second-to-last mission. A flawless flight that lifted off on time, landed when it was scheduled to, safely returned to Earth, all seven astronauts, including Nicole Stott, who had spent 3 months aboard the International Space Station. Of course, with the conclusion of this flight, there are now only five shuttle missions remaining on the schedule. And the idea that this program is about to end is starting to hit home more and more to a lot more people, even Shuttle Launch Director Mike Leinbach said as much after Atlantis lifted off that day. And I don't want to dwell too much on the downside of that. It inevitably, as we talk about it, could take us to some bad places. It is beginning to look a lot like Christmas out there. Certainly today you think it could almost start snowing at any minute. But I want to keep things on this program very positive for the next few weeks. And but with that said, the shuttle's days are numbered. And so let me say this to, I guess, all of my Florida neighbors. You know, if you have relatives or good friends who have never seen a shuttle launch, I've got a great idea for a Christmas present. Buy them airline tickets or train tickets or bus passes or whatever it is that you have to buy, whatever it is you have to do to get them down here to see a shuttle launch before it's too late. There are only five more left for next year. Now, you know, of course, this reminds me, and some of you have probably heard me say this before, but I firmly believe there is simply no better way to get someone to become passionate about our space program than to get them to witness a launch firsthand. You know, people need to see with their own eyes that the flame coming out of the back of the shuttle is so bright it actually hurts their eyes. They need to hear the sound of the solid rocket boosters wash over them and then become so loud, so powerful, you know, that you no longer hear the sound. You feel it. And then just as you think you can't take the pounding crackle anymore, you know, you look down and you see that your clothes are actually vibrating. The noise is so powerful. And then of course, suddenly the noise kind of abates. It goes away. You look up. And, you know, that giant space shuttle that was on the pad just moments ago has now become this tiny star fading into the distant sky. It's absolutely one of the most amazing things. And of course, that is when you would notice the most amazing thing of all. You know, when you turn and you look at your guests who have, for the first time, seen, have witnessed this miracle of human imagination, this miracle of technical achievement, and you see tears in their eyes because they just have no other way to respond to the experience that they just lived through. It happens time and again, over and over again. You know, Atlas Vs, Delta Fours, Delta Twos are all just as amazing, but I think always the shuttle has been something special because it is so big and powerful, but mostly, of course, because it does carry humans into space. You know, it's Christmas time. Buy the tickets. Get your family and friends down here. Get them down here fast. There are only five more opportunities to see what has got to be a modern wonder of the world. And of course, the countdown clocks are still ticking. So I hope that you take that advice and do something neat about it. What else in November? A couple things happened. I'll tell you, this is one thing that happened that I bet very few of you knew about. If you happen to have seen it, I'd sure love to hear from you. During the past month, I probably was one of the only ones to see it. But there it was, right on my television. Apollo 11 Moonwalker Buzz Aldrin was on The Price is Right with Drew Carey. That's right. You heard it here, folks. He was there at the end of the program to describe one of the showcases at the end of the hour, which I actually thought was pretty cool. The showcase included, let me see if I can remember, it was an autographed book from Buzz, his latest book. It included a trip to space camp in Huntsville. It included a trip here to the Kennedy Space Center to see a launch. I assume they mean a launch attempt. And then, of course, are you ready? Wait for it. A new car. So I don't remember what the bid was or the final number was, but that space theme showcase, it was up over $30,000, by the way. It was a fancy car, a big sports car that Buzz looked really good in and got in the front seat right away. And but they did win. That contestant did win the space theme showcase. I don't know if that person was here or not. I should probably look into that and see whatever became of it. But Buzz did okay. But it was really neat to see, you know, that just show up on a game show. And it's an innovative way. Talk about Buzz finding innovative ways to get the message out, you know, with the rapping he did during the anniversary and all the other stuff to get out there and do that. I thought that was pretty cool. Let's see. What else in the notes here? Russian launch at Baikonur. There's always a bunch of launches from the Baikonur Cosmodrome by Russia. But a new science module went up during the month of November to the International Space Station. So that outpost continues to keep getting bigger and bigger, equipped with more capabilities. So that was kind of a neat thing. Should mention the Atlas V liftoff that happened a couple of weeks ago. Middle of the night, quite a sight as always, a beautiful nighttime liftoff. And again, continued congratulations to United Launch Alliance for their work in getting that done. Of course, we have a Delta Four on the pad tonight, hoping to get off the ground. We'll talk about that more toward the end of the hour. Let's see, what else? A lot of people complained, that they didn't see enough. There's so many things we could see, but that they didn't see enough when the La Crosse spacecraft slammed into the moon, in the lunar surface in October. Remember that? It hit the moon, so-called bombed the moon. Of course, it had no bombs on board. And everyone was making fun of that, but the scientists did see plenty and have had time to analyze their data, and last month did announce that there very definitely is water on the moon. And that's a good thing, and someday it's going to come in handy. And again, I want to reiterate that I believe it was worth every penny we spent to find out that that was the case. So a lot of things going on during this month, and a lot more to come, of course. Well, I'm looking at the clock here. We've just got a few more seconds before we take our first break. I want to say that when we return, we're going to be joined from Houston by Cy Liebergott, a legendary NASA flight controller who is probably best known for his role during the Apollo 13 mission in 1970. He, of course, the author of Apollo Ecom, Journey of a Lifetime. And you can join us and talk to Cy yourself by giving us a call, 768-1240. Star 1240 on the AT&T Wireless. Send us email. And after this break, we'll be back with more Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And 321-768-1240 is the number to call us In the studio right now, as we say, welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Also, send us some email if you'd like, spacetalking@AOL.com. And now would be a great time to stand by to send us an email or give us a call because we're about to invite our guests to come online. Let me tell you this. When I was growing up in Minnesota, I read every space-related book in the library of Ron Elementary School. And one of my favorites was a book published in 1973 and written by a man named Henry S.F. Cooper, and it was called 13, The Flight That Failed. And the reason it was my favorite wasn't so much that I was captivated necessarily by all the drama of Apollo 13, although that was cool, but because it described all the positions in mission control. As a kid, I didn't know what all these things meant. I mean, INCO, Guido, Fido, ECOM, Booster, Retro. You know, they'd all call them off, and it was all very cool and dramatic, and I had no clue what they meant, and I really wanted to learn that. In this book, because it took you through all the positions of mission control and what they all explained, what they all meant, and it was that point in my life that I actually first began to appreciate that there was a mission control in Houston, that there were people working the flight on the ground, that it wasn't all about just the astronauts. And in that book, it was the first time I ever heard of a guy named Cy Liebergott, who was an ECOM on that flight. We'll ask him to explain what that was in a minute. And as you've seen maybe in the movie, found himself right in the middle of all the drama that was Apollo 13. I now retired from the space program, but still active in promoting our achievements in space and the importance of education. Again, Cy is the author of a book called Apollo ECOM, Journey of a Lifetime. And I'm so happy today he joined us by phone from the Houston area, where the last I heard, there was a lot of snow on the ground. Cy, are you staying warm?
Yeah. It got down where we are, just a little south of Houston, got down to, I don't know, probably about 30 degrees. The snow stayed on the ground. It got up this morning. That was kind
of
cool.
Wow. Well, you know, of course, it's raining here and it's supposed to get cold tonight, and you'd think it was about to snow, but it's not quite as bad. But
well, we had about 2.5 inches of snow down here.
That's amazing. Does that paralyze the city down over there?
Oh, no.
You're used to that.
The ground was still warm, you know, relatively speaking, and the road stayed pretty clear. I don't know what happened on the overpasses, you know, the freeway overpasses that are exposed top and bottom to the cold air. I imagine the city got after those with some kind of material. But, no, I stayed home last night.
Good. Well, I'm glad you could still be able to join us today, and appreciate that. And of course, astronauts always get the ultimate question, what's it really like? So let's just start with that question with you. Let's take you back to April of 1970 and start with the obvious question. Again, we've seen the movie. We understand the basics of what happened. But you, some of the audience, in fact, even lived through it as you did. But you had the front row seat. You were looking at the screen and heard it over your headsets. Take us through just the first few minutes before and after it all started.
Sure.
What was that like?
And for those who have not heard my lectures on Apollo 13, and I've got a bunch of them, they can always read the book. My autobiography's got the actual screens, data screens in the back that you can actually look at the data and follow through with it. It's pretty exciting stuff. And plus the fact that I've got a CD-ROM where you can listen to the intercom traffic at my console for 4 hours.
Wow.
Through all that. So if you want to relive it, like some people love to do, then that'll do it. But, you know, our shifts in the control center for the flight controllers were 8-hour shifts. And I was in the last hour of my 8-hour shift. And it was our job at the end of our shift to put the crew to bed. You know, they had a certain things we needed to get done pre-sleep. They had a pre-sleep checklist. And then the next team came on and babysat the the spacecraft and the astronauts through their sleep period. In the last hour of their shift, they woke the crew up, and the crew would go through their post-sleep checklist. And one of the things that the crew would do as part of their post-sleep checklist was stir to cryos.
Right.
We had 4 cryogenic storage tanks, 2 oxygen, 2 hydrogen, and the oxygen-hydrogen combination in the what we call fuel cells would reduce electricity and pure drinking water. The oxygen also supplied the breathing air oxygen for the crew.
Sure.
So it's pretty critical stuff. And we had some problems with oxygen tank number two's quantity readout, which is no big deal because we fed the tank simultaneously so that if we lost the readings in one tank, we could infer everything we needed to know by looking at the good tank readings. Anyway, we lost the quantity readout, and since we stirred the cryos only once a day, that was post-sleep mm-hmm. for the crew, and being a good flight controller, I decided I wanted to have an extra stir to get a good reading of the quantity. The quantity kind of flaky in zero gravity. And so I asked for an extra stir, and, and unfortunately, that's when the tank decided to blow up.
Now, admittedly, that wasn't your fault, and if you had asked for it on the next shift, it probably would have happened then.
Well, not necessarily, it turns out.
Okay.
It's just a matter of when the wires, they were twisted pair, fan wiring, and just we had two little fans in each of the tanks that stirred the cryos, and it all depended on just how much the wires got jiggled, because before we launched Apollo 13, there was an ill-advised, poorly conducted and monitored tank detanking test that the engineers at the Cape performed. One of the tanks, that was tank number two, after a test, they couldn't empty it easily, and the whole chronology of the tank problem over an 8-year period is really spooky to read. I've got that in the back of my book,
talk
so you
about
can
it, yeah.
follow in that. But it was as if the failure had eyes.
Yeah,
little links in the chain over an 8-year period added up to finally cause the engineers to do this poorly conducted test, which they turned the heaters on in the tanks and to forcibly boil the oxygen out of it, as opposed to just using pressurized oxygen to blow it out.
Right.
And and what happened was the they didn't know that when they turned the tank heaters on, that that would cause the ultimate problem. They told the ground tech, don't let the temperature in the tank get above plus 80 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, normally it's about minus 350, 320 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that's quite a difference.
The trouble was is that the ground meter on temperature of the inside of the tank only went to 80.
Yeah.
So the technician sat there watching the needle at 80 degrees for 10 hours.
Jeez.
And 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, which it boiled the oxygen out, but it also cracked and charred the Teflon insulation to the
right.
fan wiring.
So you had bare wires connect and
now
the spark,
we had
boom.
Nearly bare wires. And, you know, just a little bit of a spark in pure oxygen with a little bit of hydrocarbon, which Teflon yeah. is, will give you quite a fire and explosion.
So let's go really quick back to the incident. So the screen, you asked for the stir. It happens, and the call about Houston, we had a problem. Where does that tie in with when you first saw your screen blink or do something different?
Well, when
what was the first indication you had something was a problem?
Well, we were watching, my backroom guys and I were watching the data, and I told them to watch the hydrogen and the oxygen, and I would watch the hydrogen tanks. We didn't have any telemetry when Swigert actually threw the four switches.
Right.
And the hydrogen behaved a little differently than the oxygen. The oxygen pressure would change. The oxygen, the quantity would change. So that's the, you know, so we were staring at it, and I didn't know that my backroom guys were looking at the hydrogen tanks like I was. Nobody was looking to the left
right.
about an inch at the oxygen tank reading.
Okay.
And it wouldn't make a whole lot of difference. The data changed so rapidly within seconds, the tank blew. But anyway, the first thing we heard was this crackle on the downlink.
Right.
And that's when we lost data, and we got what we call ratty data. You know, we just get staticky. And that's what we thought had happened. But immediately we had some down voice from the crew saying, hey, Houston, we've had a problem here. And that's when I started looking, and my data didn't make any sense because a lot of it was static and odd readings. Because remember, the one thing that we never trained for was the explosion of 100% reliable tank of oxygen.
It was impossible. It wasn't supposed to happen.
100% reliability.
Right.
So did your world just... My talks after about 10 minutes of troubleshooting, it was pretty obvious we had a real problem, and it wasn't an instrumentation problem, as I thought it would be like Apollo 12.
Right. When they got hit by lightning.
I like to tell my... the people, my audience, is that when you discovered that denial is not just a river in Egypt.
That's right. So your world must have just, I mean, you're all professional about it, but did you just, your heart sink? We got about 20 seconds here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a near panic starts to try to set in, but you know, the old saw, the trite saw, you know, the training kicked in.
Right.
And you say, I'm just going to work the problem, and you shove the panic down and sit there, and you know, you don't go home.
Okay, well, we're going to take a pause here, Si. We're going to finish the story, talk a little bit about the movie, talk about some other things too. As we stop now to take our little 5-minute built-in hold, when we return, more with Si right here on Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you are listening to WMMB.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
Well, and welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Want to remind you all that Space Talk can be heard live online right now every week at this time at WMMBAM.com. And usually by about late Monday afternoon every week, a recording of the today's show, the previous Saturday show, will be available as a podcast to download, again, at WMMBAM.com. And before we get back to Si in Houston, let's check in with Tracy Yates from United Space Alliance and find out what's going on at KSC with them. Good to talk to you again, Tracy.
Hi, Jim. Nice to talk to you today.
Yeah. What's the highlights? What's the headlines? What's been going on?
Well, as you know, we're coming off a very busy time. Within really 3 weeks, we launched the Ares 1X test flight, and then turned around and launched STS-129, which you mentioned earlier. So
right.
And both of those launches were terrific.
There was some good data released this week on Ares 1X. It sounds like it was hard to find anything that went wrong with the thing.
Yeah, it was a very successful test flight. The folks who worked so hard on that are all really pleased. You know, the one issue they had was with the parachutes, which I'm sure you heard about.
Sure.
One fully deployed. A second, it may have deployed, but may have been impacted by a third that had trouble. So they're sorting that out. It's going to be a while before they figure out exactly what happened. But other than that, tremendously successful.
Yeah.
Launch. It was a privilege to witness a test flight. I every time I see the footage of the test flights from back in the 60s, I'm jealous.
Right.
So to get to see one was really exciting.
Well, we talk about the end of the shuttler. Wasn't it just, I mean, I don't know if these are the right words, but it was just so weird to have something else out there and mm-hmm. launching. It was almost dreamlike.
Yeah, it was this tall, thin vehicle that looked so different from the
yeah.
space shuttle.
Well, let's hope we get another one up soon.
Yeah, and of course it brought us the term tribo-electrification.
Yes, yes. Tribo-electrification. I've been talking to the wing about getting Kathy Winters, the shuttle weather officer, to come on board, and I don't know whether we're going to praise her or yell at her for an hour, but that was quite something, an unusual weather phenomena that I hope we never have to deal with again.
Yeah, there's a person who has to withstand a lot of stress and remain calm.
Oh, yeah.
She does a great job.
There's got to be a tribal electrification award you could come up with or something, you know. I don't know. What's looking ahead? I know we're done with launches and basically other than the Delta tonight, but in terms of shuttle, when are we looking at flying again?
Right. There's no rest for the weary at the Space Center, so we're busy getting ready to roll Endeavour from the hangar over to the vehicle assembly building where it'll be stacked with the two solid rocket boosters and the external tank. That'll happen on December 12th is the current target date
okay.
for that. So things are rolling along for the next mission. And as you mentioned, of course, only 5 to go. It's going to be an interesting year.
Sure, sure. Well, let's check in with you again next week or soon and talk about some holiday plans, too, for USA and what it's like out there. And thanks for the update today.
Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tracy. Okay, Tracy Yates, United Space Alliance, with an update. Let's go right back out to Houston. Si Liebergott, Apollo 13 ecom and all-around flight controller and good guy, author of Apollo Ecom Journey of a Lifetime. Cy,
yeah,
we're talking about Apollo 13, the tank ruptures, explodes, your data goes funny, you got the sinking feeling, the professionalism kicks in. Now, how many days is it? How many hours? When do you feel like it's going to turn out to be a success? Did you have to wait for splashdown, or was, I mean, when did that happen for you?
Well, we all had to wait until we actually got them on the deck of the carrier to consider the fact we actually saved them, saved the crew. But there was no doubt in my mind, and virtually all of our minds, that we couldn't get them back. I mean, we knew that we could get them back as long as we had the lunar module attached. We knew we could work with that, and it turned out that way. Some people in our ranks that were interviewed, and they said, you know, this guy said there was, we really didn't think we could get him back, and that was baloney. No doubt in our minds that we could get him back.
Now let's get into it as our time obviously is short, but Apollo 13, the movie, you watched it. Clint Howard played you in the movie. There's very little resemblance, but.
I make sure in my lectures that people can see the difference.
I remember when we watched it here at Kennedy, you know, we had a big premiere here, and we all kind of cringed at certain things that happened, you know, that we saw at Kennedy when they were stacking the Saturn V, and it made this big clunking noise that echoed throughout the VAB. You know, that was pretty wild for us. But what did you see? Did you like the movie? Was it accurate? Was it a keeper?
Well, you know, I tell people this in my lectures, that it's important to keep in mind that Ron Howard was making a drama. He was making a movie. He was not making a documentary. So he could take, since he was doing that, he could take even a large degree of artistic license, as he took by casting his brother to portray me in the movie.
Yeah.
A number of things, and I point them out. You know, he couldn't use the NASA film, so he had to do a lot of graphics on within himself. And you know, of course, you know, the launch of the Saturn V, when the launch umbilical arms all released one at a time.
Right. A lot of drama.
There's a number of things. For example, Jack Swigert was not the bumbling, incompetent fool that he was made out to be.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
And at the end, Ken Mattingly, who got bumped off the mission, was made to look like he was in charge of creating the procedures for the command module power-up for entry, and that was not true.
Yeah.
John Aaron, my brother Econ, was the manager of that, and it's like, Ken told me, he says, I was just a monkey. Here's the switches to
Here's
throw,
the switches
go in the trainer
throw.
And throw.
Well, that you know, I felt like, and maybe you agree with me, that I felt like, you know, although there were these little details that only us space cadets really recognized, overall the movie was a very good depiction, not only of the Apollo 13 flight, but kind of the whole Apollo program wrapped up in one two-hour chunk of time.
Yeah, now Ron was a stickler for accuracy. I mean, he had his contractors down at Johnson Space Center, and you know, they went into the MOCR, the Mission Operations Control Room, and measured it and reproduced it almost exactly.
Yeah.
In Burbank, they actually went to Lovell's home where he was living. He had lived, and measured and took pictures of the part of the house they wanted to have in the movie.
Yeah.
And reproduce that. It was spookily done well, but you know, just like I said, the important thing though was that in 1995, when that movie played in movie houses, I mean, people actually stood up and applauded.
Right.
I mean, teenagers who weren't even alive then, and he really did us a favor in re-energizing the public's interest in our space program.
Well, let's talk about that more in a second. I wanted to just tell you quick. I don't know if you've heard this story, but when they filmed here at Kennedy, they came and did the remote shots here. They had planned for this whole thing, and you know, a movie, every last little detail planned, everything all set to go, and the whole entourage comes out here, and they get it all set up, and they all get ready to film beautiful sunshine state of Florida, and for those 2 days they were here, so. thickest fog we'd had here in years, the entire time they filmed. And we're out there, and they're in the crawler way, and they're moving, you know, they're moving the crawler and the panel, and they're going around the VAB and filming. And we looked at him, and we asked him, and says, you know, what are you going to, you know, you come here, and there's all this fog here. What are you going to do with it? What's the deal? And he says, no problem. We'll take it out in editing.
Well, they did so much digitally, you know. I thought the most persevering thing that they did was flying the parabolic flights. I think Ron told me they flew like 417 or more parabolic flights to get the zero gravity scenes.
Yeah.
And then they spliced them all together.
And that's amazing. Si, we have a gentleman, Steve from Palm Bay, want to join us here and ask a question about Apollo 13. Steve, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's the question?
I just think it's amazing that they were able to send men into space, because I think looking backwards, it's just so interesting. But what I wanted to ask was, what did they learn from Apollo 13? After all that, after having to go through the procedures to bring those guys back alive, did they learn anything special?
Yes. Si, with about a minute and a half before our next break.
Sure. We learned a lot to make the, like after the Apollo 1 pad fire, we learned a lot from that. We learned a lot from Apollo 13 to make the spacecraft safer. We added a 400 amp hour lunar module descent battery in the service module. We added another 320 pound oxygen tank. We added water bags. There's a lot of things that we took all the wiring out of the inside of the cryogenic tanks, so that would never happen again. Now, when we flew the spacecraft on Apollo 14, we had an incredibly safer spacecraft.
Well, it's just a neat program. I actually got to stand on the back of Challenger. I worked at the Space Center before.
Wow,
and it is just amazing to be part of the space program. And I agree with you, Jim, that for them to watch the shuttle go off, and to me, to watch Orion go off was just amazing, because I want to see it continue. We've got to keep going.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're fortunate. I never saw Saturn V launch because I was always,
over
in the
there.
Box. And I finally got to see two shuttle launches. So that's enough for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Steve, hey, I'm in a Christmas mood, Steve. Thanks for your questions. I have a copy of Si's book just for you. So
that's excellent.
Talk back to Aaron here and give him your contact information. We'll send it out to you. Thanks for your question.
Okay, thank you very much.
Si, can you stick around for just a little bit more?
Sure.
Okay, good. Well, that'd be great, because we just have a couple more things we want to ask about the future of the space program. Again, time to get in the last call, 768-1240, some email, spacetalking@AOL.com. But in the meantime, we're going to pause for just one last break here, come back. More with Si Liebregott here on Space Talk with Jim Behnke, right here on WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance, in our final segment today. And I want to remind everybody that Si Liebregott's book, Apollo Ecom, Journey of a Lifetime, published by Apogee Books, which, by the way, Apogee Books is one of the, I mean, they're just incredible. They're out of Canada, and they have the greatest line of space-related books that that anybody has produced that I've ever seen. And we will be featuring them quite a bit here over the months ahead as Space Talk continues. Remember Gunter Wendt's book, The Unbroken Chain, when Gunter was on last fall. His book also published by Apogee Books. And Si, you were lucky to get connected with those folks. And I encourage everybody to get a copy. If you go to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, later tonight or maybe early tomorrow, I'll have a link to the book and all that taken care of. Of course, you can get it at Amazon and Google it. And Si, good job on the book. It's a really
good
thing.
Well, you've got a link to my website, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be on there. And so let's talk about I want to talk a little bit real quick about the future. You mentioned lessons learned. We mentioned Apollo 13 being a kind of a shot in the arm. As you are out and about, what's your sense of the public's interest in space, and what's your sense about where we should be going right now with all the talk about what might be?
Well, it depends on the audience I'm talking to. If I'm speaking to college undergrads, the questions are very sparse, because they, to them, you know, the Apollo program is ancient history, and they have apparently have a real difficult time relating to it.
Yeah.
And the questions that I get from some of the more mature audiences is just that: where are we going from here? And I told them, I says, you know, we're going to, in a couple of years, terminate the shuttle program, and 5 years after that, we're going to dump the space station in the Pacific, and that'll be the end of that. And, of course, they're shocked and horrified that
right.
you would do that. And I said, why should you be shocked and horrified? That's what we did at the end of the Apollo program.
Yeah.
You know, we after ASTP, we terminated the Apollo program. We took perfectly good Saturn V's and made them into lawn ornaments,
right.
and just took a 5-year hiatus until we started up shuttle. So it's deja vu again.
Right.
It's nothing new about it. Just the way I tell the Russians, ASTP, that's the way we do it here.
And you don't see it changing, and you wonder whether or not there's going to be enough money and interest to even sustain something another 5 or 6 years from now.
What I tell them, I said, we ought to just skip the moon because everybody thinks that the Chinese will get to the moon and that'll be our challenge to go meet them. And I said, no, why should we do that?
Yeah.
I said, what we should do, I believe, is just go on and establish a Mars program if we want to keep the human presence in space, which I think we should. And we should always keep pushing the boundaries, technology boundaries of our country, because if you don't do that, then you end up being another exploring country like so many of our nations are in the world now.
Right.
And so the question comes up, says, well, wait a minute. we don't know how to get to Mars. And I says, we should establish a 30-year program, and we'll solve all the problems along the way. You've got medical problems to solve. We don't know how to do surgery in space, so that was one of the objectives mm-hmm. of the very first space station I worked on in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Bone loss. We need a centrifuge module, which I think we're supposed to have on our space station, which never came to pass.
Probably not going to happen now. Yeah.
And we can solve all those problems. I said the only problem with all of that, it's political. There's not a politician who is willing to sign up for continuing financing of a program that is going to outlast his term in office.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do it. So the end result is we're not going to have a real presence in space with humans. And I see bad things for our space program here in the United States.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's a challenge out there, and there's sometimes hope and optimism, sometimes a lot of pessimism, But the bottom line here, I think, and I agree with you in that sense, is that something's got to change. Something's got to happen that's going to make politicians think long term, is going to make our nation think longer term than the next election, and there's got to be something to turn it around. And I don't know what that is yet,
well,
and
I'll
I keep
tell you
trying to
is.
Find what it is.
Patrick Moynihan, who is one of our great statesmen of our Congress, once said that a statesman looks down 100 years perhaps in the future and what works for our country, a politician only concerned with getting reelected.
Yeah.
He said there are no statesmen in Congress.
Yeah, and that seems to be the case, doesn't it? Cy,
that's right. And I hate to paint such a gloomy picture for people, but, you know, I mean, I don't work for NASA.
Right.
And they can't tell me to shut up.
Right. Well, and the picture is gloomy, and my only optimism is that I'm still hopeful we can do something about it. And finding what that is and getting the right answer is still, at least to me, the mystery, although I'm going to keep trying, that's for sure.
Well, I appreciate what Steve said about, you know, he wanted to see the program continue, our space program, and he of course, had seen the Ares
right.
one launch, and I to me, that's not the answer. I mean, I think our answer should have been the Saturn V.
yeah, never let go. Cy, I got a couple things more I got to do. Let's
sure.
wrap up our conversation. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Again, Cy Liebergott, Apollo Ecom, Journey of a Lifetime. Thanks again, Cy. Have a great holiday season.
You bet, and same to everybody online.
Good,
take
thank
care.
You.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, there goes Cy Lieber. Got a couple things I want to tell you in just the brief time we have left. First of all, the Delta IV launch tonight, 7:23 to 8:47, still going well at the Cape. Unfortunately, because of the launch delays and scheduling and holidays and parties and previous commitments and vacations and all of that, we're going to be unable to bring it to you live on the air here on WMMB, but I certainly encourage you to keep an eye on our news partner channel, News Channel 13, which will have some live coverage. And so if that gets off the ground tonight, you know what that is. Space Station flying overhead tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, 6:32 in the morning for 5 minutes, very high up in the sky, southwest to northeast, 6:32 in the morning. And as I read Brevard Community College, I read in Florida today, there are apparently some places in the county where when the station flies over, it's going to fly directly in front of the moon. So that should be very interesting. I hope you all get a chance to get out there and see that. At the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, continuing this week is Space Weeks. All sixth graders in Brevard County, if you've seen them running around with NASA bags this week, it's going to continue. They get to tour the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, an annual program sponsored in large part by the National Space Club Florida Committee, of which I'm a member, and I want to make sure that we recognize that a lot of people went and worked hard to raise money and make that thing happen. Lots of plans for you in the coming weeks here. We've got some great holiday programs coming up. Be sure to stay up to date with Space Talk on WMMBAM.com. Good luck to the Gators tonight in the SEC Finals. Good luck to the Vikings, 10-1. Yeah, undefeated November. Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. This is WMMB.